we've talked about, I've heard Mr. Foley, we've talked about investigations. I think we need one. I'd like to see HHS Inspector General come in and look at this, look at Sharp Hospital, and also look at disability rights. Why are we now in this adversarial position that Mr. Folio says we're not in? Why? 1 week, nothing changed. We still do the same thing we've always done. But yet now we're in this situation where we're trying to respond to questions over and over again. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, well, thank you for your answers. And I do believe Co-Chair Ben Grady has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Yes.
I do have a question I want to ask you specifically. I'm going to read it verbatim, not the actual question, but I want to read. There is an email that several senators have. The email was sent out by Shavonna Lusk, who's the chief operating officer, for those who don't know that, to Sharp and Bateman staff concerning disability rights. The email states this exactly. Everyone, if you receive a request from Disability Rights of West Virginia requesting information, don't provide a response. You need to send the request to Secretary Crouch, April Robertson, and Alan Campbell to review. Alan will help with the response. Thanks. End of email. My question to you is, it's my understanding that the Disability Rights of West Virginia do not have to go through anyone to get information. They can ask an employee themselves for information. What's the purpose of not allowing that information to be given out for it to have to go through attorneys and through yourself? That's my question.
Again, the last line of that, the important part of that is that Alan Campbell will assist with the response. There was no, and it was only sent to our CEOs. We were getting a letter, an email, almost daily. And we've always had the attorney. Mr. Folio assisted in responding to requests from different agencies. Again, nothing has changed, but keep in mind at the time, we didn't have a general counsel for folks to rely on to ask, is this an appropriate answer? And that's part of what everyone does in terms of responding to those requests. So it only went to CEOs. There was never, and it was a discussion Shavonna and I had. It could have been written better, I agree. But the discussion was, we're getting all these letters in. How can we even respond to these? Some people are better at that than others. But we said, coordinate those, send those, a copy of that to us so that our attorney general counsel can assist with the response. It's a routine issue. It's never, there was no indication not to talk to anyone. There's nothing in that email that says don't talk to anyone from disability rights. And yet that came out and that's being pushed as something nefarious and something we were trying to do. There was no intent there. It was true. We had no general counsel. We'd named an interim and we were trying to make sure we had legal representation in terms of those responses. That's it. It's that simple.
Okay, I agree with you when you said that it could have been written better.
I agree.
Because the part that's a little alarming is this, don't provide a response. And I do agree that, you know, a lot of places do have people look over responses before they're sent. But maybe thinking twice about how things are worded before they're sent out to employees would be a good, good response.
I agree with that, and I appreciate that.
Thank you for
answering. Really had to do with the conversation with Shavonna and I about all those written communications coming in. There was no intent anywhere to not respond.
Okay. Thank you for answering. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Grady. I've got one question. Actually, I've got a lot of questions, but we don't have time for all of them. But we had some testimony here in the last legislature about our problems with IDD waiver homes and IDD patient population in general. And I'm seeing some questions here about the Colin Anderson Center and in regards to IDD patients being there improperly. And I'd like to give you a chance to respond to where we're at with the IDD waiver abuse program or the abuse problems we've seen and our status with the Colin Anderson Center.
Well, let me talk about the group homes. I came to this body, I think in 2018 or 2019, and asked for the ability to levy fines to those group homes that did not provide good service to patients. And I met with some of those groups. I met with the one that's the largest in the state, and I I asked for the president, didn't get the president, but I got some pretty high up folks. And I told them point blank, they were the largest provider in the state of these services, and they were the worst provider of state in these services. They promised they were going to do better, and they've I'm not sure done much better. But the point is, we're now finding these folks. We're pushing. OFLAC is the body that is responsible for oversight and surveying these facilities. So OFLAC has been bearing down on these facilities, and if there are issues, then they are not only fined, they have a hold on admissions, which is difficult to do because we only have a certain number of beds in the state. And we've talked about that, Mr. Chairman, in terms of how we deal with that. If you only have so many beds in the state and you need those beds, but some of the providers aren't providing good care, and you say you can't admit any more patients, that becomes an issue again in terms of how to deal with the appropriate level of care. The other thing I've told our folks over and over and over is no one should live in a psychiatric hospital or be in a psychiatric hospital unless that's the last option. That's the last resort. Everybody's heard me say that. So we try to move people into lower levels of care, the least restrictive level of care they can be in. The problem we have is the group homes are inadequate. The number of group homes are inadequate in West Virginia. And that's part of the plan that we had. Mr. Foley is aware of that. He claims, we don't have a plan because it's not written down. We've had the same plan for several years. Increase the number of community placements for these folks. We have 36 coming online now. We have a facility in Fayette County, 12-bed facility. We have, I believe, 7 folks in that facility. It's for forensic patients. They have to come through the court system. So the judge has to approve placement in that facility. We're trying to fill it up. When it's filled, instead of paying $1,000 or $800 to $1,000 a day, we're paying about $400 a day. So it will save about $2 million. So we have 36 more of those beds coming online, looking at placements for IDD folks. We've been working on it for 2 or 3 years. We go to the Department of Real Estate, and they make a posting, and we get the private sector to build these buildings to specs for IDD patients. And then we enter into a lease with the behavioral health centers in the community to operate these facilities. A big part of the problem is they're having difficulty finding staff to staff these facilities. Workforce is still one of the biggest issues we have. We have some group homes out there that have beds, but there are no staff to take care of these folks. But that's what we need, is more community placement. We've got to get folks out of facilities, out of psychiatric facilities, and into community placement. In terms of the long-term care facilities, the statement was made, we're not putting people in long-term care facilities. We do a pass. That's a pre-admission screening for that. That's a requirement to get into a nursing home. We have folks in our psychiatric facilities have a pass done on them, and they don't pass. They don't meet the requirements. We try to get folks placed in nursing homes, say, because they many times are combative of mental health problems, but they refuse to take them. We certainly want these people in the right level of care. That's what we're trying to do. So there's no intent to keep people in a psychiatric hospital. Why would anyone want to do that? But we need more community placement. We need more people to staff those facilities in the community.
One last question. There were some questions raised about an order of non-compliance with the Hartley order in it. As you're well aware, we've wrestled as a committee and a legislature with the compliance with the Hartley order for entire 8 years I've been here, and probably longer. So if you'd like to address that allegation of non-compliance.
Well, the Hartley order was a lawsuit that has been in effect for 39 years and 9 months, I believe. It has been around that long, almost 40 years. I was able to get that lawsuit dismissed. I year, 2 years ago, I'm not even sure when. So after 39 years working with Judge Bloom, we got that lawsuit dismissed. What I agreed to do that, to get that lawsuit dismissed, was to have a mental health ombudsman placed in the Inspector General's office, the DHHR, so that we had another set of eyes yet for these individuals out there. And that individual was just hired. We had the same health, I think it was called a court monitor at that time, that Judge Bloom had named. That individual retired, I think, in December. So we began recruiting. That position was filled a month or 2 months ago. So we now have a mental health ombudsman in the Inspector General's office who can also, in addition to the legal aid individuals, the advocates, in addition to disability rights, in addition to OFLAC, and again, CMS directs OFLAC in terms of those investigations. Not DHHR. They report directly to CMS. I've never been involved in any state facility survey. I've never been given a heads up that, hey, we're going to your facility tomorrow. It's a surprise to me, just like it is private sector facilities. So there's a lot of oversight there. But Hartley was, again, for 39 years, a part that we had to go to court quarterly and meet with the judge. And we now have some orders there that stayed in place. And so we're following those. We're doing as best can be done with regard to the system and the ability to move patients based on capacity in the community. And again, that's our goal. That's what we do, to imply we're trying to keep folks in a psychiatric facility. It's nonsense. Nonsense.
We did hear some talk about the cost of certain geriatric patients seem to be pretty excessive. And is that just a lack of a better option or oversight where they got missed and kept someplace where they shouldn't have been at a higher cost? If you could perhaps let us know a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's very expensive to keep folks in a residential type setting. Whether it's a psychiatric patient at $100 a day, a nursing home patient at $220 a day. It is, if you add those dollars up over a year or 5 years, it's astronomical. There's no question. It goes back to, though, getting those folks in the right level of care. The implication is we're keeping them in a level of care that they shouldn't be in. If we are, it's because we can't find placement elsewhere. But the cost of that is going to go down as we place them in a less restrictive level of care generally. So, but it's costly. Those numbers are there. We can provide any numbers you like. That's all public information. Again, everything we do is open. It's public. Ask us for it. We'll give it to you. We're not hiding anything.
Do we have any other questions of the committee? Delegate Pushkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, thank you, Secretary Crouch, for responding to the report. I have a whole lot of questions. I'm sure like a lot of people do, so I'm going to try to keep it short so we can get to other people can ask their questions. It's two separate issues. One, you've talked about the regulation. Of course, OFLAC is charged with regulating both the private facilities, the smaller settings, as well as the state hospitals, correct?
That's correct.
How many surveyors or investigators do they have right now compared to the amount of beds and hospitals that they're supposed to be regulating?
Yeah, I don't have that information, Delegate, but I'm happy to get it for you. We are short. We're recruiting for investigators now. We're short of, we've been short of investigators for some time. We also do not have an inspector general right now. She passed away, and we're interviewing for that position as well. But we do have a workforce problem in the Inspector General's office and in the Office of Health Facilities. So we are looking to add to that staff.
In just ballpark figure, how short are we on investigators and surveyors? And last week you announced that there was a hiring freeze, or maybe it was the week before. Will that affect this?
It will not affect critical, crucial positions. No, the hiring freeze will not affect that. I don't have the number of positions right now, but as the last I recall, we're about 30% low in terms of those positions. So we are recruiting for more folks.
Have there been conversations about addressing the pay for these positions? I mean, if you like hire a nurse at this at one of these positions, they're probably going to get half of what they could in the private sector.
Yeah, that's true of just about every position at DHHR. We have been systematically increasing salaries for quite a few positions. We get special hiring rates for, we started that with CPS workers. We've done that with other classifications. We may be to that point with inspectors for the Office of Inspector General.
Okay. One more issue, and I'm going to try to narrow it down to just the gist of it here. I think everybody can agree that state mental hospital, two state mental hospitals, is not the proper setting for an IDD patient. Okay, what and you say you're trying to get them to a lower restrictive setting. The problem is these private agencies are reluctant to accept a referral because a lot of times they don't feel like they're getting enough support from the state. As far even with like psychiatric care, if they get referred there and say there needs to be a medication change, well, they would feel like that puts them in a position they feel like they're not getting enough support from the state on this. So basically, what are we planning to do to address it? I think we can all agree this is not where these patients belong. It's probably the most vulnerable part of our population, many of whom can't communicate for themselves. No idea why they're in this setting, and what's the plan to fix it?
Well, again, we're looking at more group homes to try to move folks into that level. But let me address that issue. I agree with you. I mean, this is a vulnerable population, and we have to do everything we can to care for them. The individuals in the psychiatric hospitals are not just IDD. They have a mental health diagnosis as well. And many are combative and using medicine, medications, et cetera, can help. Sometimes it does not. So
I'm not talking about, the question's not about the other patients in Sharps and at Bateman. I know why these hospitals are there, but why there are the IDD patients there when that's not the proper setting for them? We know why. What's the plan to fix it?
Yeah, again, the community group homes are our answer right now. But I don't want to leave everyone with the impression that all of these IDD patients in our hospitals shouldn't be there. It's not that cut and dried from the standpoint of they have an IDD diagnosis, they shouldn't be in a psychiatric hospital. So I just want to make that clear. I know that's not exactly your point. But again, the answer to getting folks that do need to be in a different level of care is build out those levels of care. And we're looking at doing it. Again, we got 36 beds coming online now. We're trying to get more going so that we have placement for those folks. But again, the big problem there is workforce. We have beds available. We can't get patients into them because the community health centers can't hire staff to take care of these folks. Those aren't easy jobs either. So it's not a simple answer, but it's really community, building out the community buildings and group homes, and also then including in that some way to increase staffing out there, whether that's increased salaries, whether that's reduce the ratio of individuals to staff to make it easier to take care of folks. We contract with these folks and we pay for them throughout the state. And again, some are good and some are not. So we're working on that. I frankly would like to see, and this is part of the discussion, and disability rights would normally probably say be against this. I've had discussions with the other advocacy groups building more, allowing more group homes. We were not permitted to add group homes under Hartley. We could, the intent behind the deinstitutionalization, where we had folks in institutions who should be in institutions, really far to that everyone should be in an individual home with a family or a small setting. And that doesn't work. So I think we're swinging back the other way some. We've got some 8-bed group homes. We're doing some training right now with those group homes, with the staff. Christina Mullins, who's Deputy Secretary of DHHR now, is developing a training plan for folks so that we can get individuals trained better in the communities to take care of these individuals and maybe be able to handle these individuals who are combative and a little bit difficult to deal with, so that we can move more of them out into the community if they're ready for that.
Doug and Tully.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Secretary Crouch, for being here. You mentioned that Mr. Folio was the general counsel.
Yes.
So as an attorney, he would be bound by client attorney privilege during communications related to matters of the DHHR. Is that correct?
I'm not an attorney, but yeah.
Neither am I, but I think I have a little bit of common sense.
Yeah, we'd assume so, yes.
So as such, you may, and really, who is the client? Because is the client you? Is it the state? Is it your agency? Who would qualify as the client to your general counsel?
Yes, we would. That's correct.
So I think to say that probably something didn't come forth, he was probably bound by some duties or legal, like, responsibilities that he had in virtue of his job. Are you familiar with...
Sorry, I'm not sure I understand that.
When he was general counsel
for DHHR?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear these complaints from Mr. Foley when he was at DHHR. I was the one who kept saying we need to move people into a lower level of care. I was the one that kept saying we don't need people living in a psychiatric facility. So I did not hear those.
But you're issues. The secretary, so you could have also made those things happen, correct? You could have also worked toward making things happen?
That's what we were doing.
But you just said that you couldn't open up any group homes or this or that. I mean, how do we approach that? I mean, how do you make that happen? Are you from the secretary?
We have been opening group homes, is what I said. We just opened a 12-bed in Fayette County within the last year, and we have three being built.
I'm going to ask you, are you familiar with Chapter 21, Article 5F, Section 3 of the West Virginia State Code?
No, I can't say that I am.
Okay, well, I'm going to read you a little excerpt out of it. Each hospital shall designate an anonymous process for patients and nurses to make staffing complaints related to patient safety. How does Bateman and Sharp handle that?
Everybody's a mandatory reporter.
It's not through the mandatory reporter. Do you use the open hotline for that in those facilities? That's what you're telling me?
Everyone in the facility is a mandatory reporter. There's also the ability, and it's probably posted, to call CMS directly. We have that happen all the time. A lot of our complaints are from staff directly. They will contact CMS or OFLAC directly, and an investigation is done. So that's very common, actually.
What process is designated when you have new hires in your employee handbook to guide those staff on how they make those reports if they have an anonymous complaint?
I'm not familiar with the employee handbook for the facilities. Sharp, for example, was joint commission approved. We follow all of the guidelines that are out there for psychiatric hospitals. They have to meet the requirements for an acute care hospital and then the requirements for a psychiatric hospital on top of that. And again, just received approval from joint commission. All of those policies are part of the review of the joint commission.
And I think it'd be fair to say that we haven't always followed all the guidelines, or we wouldn't have had a revocation of CMS accreditation, correct?
Well, that had to do with the ability of staff to chart medical information. It didn't have anything to do with care. That was an issue that we fixed by adding a component to a 20-year-old VA hospital medical records program that was inadequate. There was no way to track and to document what was going on in the facility with regard to treatment well. So, and we had to add a line coming up the hill to speed up the system.
Thank you.
Senator Lindsey, did you have a question? Okay, I'm sorry. Any other questions from the committee? Delegate Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Crouch, for being here. So I have a question. When someone is approved for IDD waiver, what is that participant considered, a participant or a patient?
If I understand your question, and we have Cindy Bean here who could answer that, who handles the ID waiver. The IDD waiver, there are specific requirements that must be met for an individual to enter into the waiver program. We're at capacity. We actually, about 3 years ago, put some money in there and eliminated the wait list. There is some wait list right now. I don't have those numbers, but I don't have the details on the waiver program. I'm sorry.
So when a participant is being treated at one of the facilities, do they transfer from being a participant to a patient, or do they remain being a participant? And I know about the IDD waiver program because my son is a recipient of the IDD waiver program. So my question is very specific. Do they remain a participant, or do they transfer in being a patient once they are admitted into one of these facilities?
I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We can get that for you.
Okay. And no other questions being seen. In the interest of time, we are well past our time, and I think we do have another committee preparing to meet in this room. But I do appreciate all the presenters today. I'm sure they will stay and be available for questions. Oh.
Dr. Halsey to come up and answer some questions, a couple of quick questions about the nursing shortage for me, if that's okay.
Okay, it'll have to be brief.